Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslowski. We are all looking to get back to something, and I'm looking to get back to another conversation with the five amazing people coming up. This is episode number 52. Welcome, my friend. I'm so grateful to be with you today, and I'm looking forward to sharing some simple goodness with you in a moment. I had the absolute pleasure of coordinating a chat between five of my newest Simplicity All-Stars in this episode, some of who you may have heard of before, others you'll want to learn a lot more about after you listen. Before we get into this episode with Dwayne Elgin, Vicky Robin, John DeGraff, Cecile Andrews, and Jerome Segal, there's a note that I need to hit on. Now, I didn't want to have to do it, but I had to cut about 60% of the conversation and employ, I gotta say, some rather crude editing transitions due to the echo when we recorded this conference call. Now, we all tried really hard to resolve the audio issues in our bad internet mojo. Ugh, darn internet mojo. But we didn't have time to scrap the call and restart it some other day due to complications of scheduling six people at once. Not easy. Unfortunately, you won't hear Vicky or John at all, although I have done my best to recap their comments in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM052. There's a special section in this episode's show notes called Joel's Written Recap of People's Comments. And I strongly suggest you supplement what you're about to hear with that written recap. Again, you can follow along at valueofsimple.com/SASM052. Don't let the remaining and manageable audio issues stop you from listening to this one all the way through. It is so, so worth it. Now, I first want to give you a few brief highlights of each person from the call, since I'm about to get right into it with them in a moment. First up, we have Dwayne Elgin, who is a media activist and author of bestsellers like Voluntary Simplicity and the recipient of an annual GOI International Peace Award. Vicky Robin is the co-author of the internationally popular Your Money or Your Life. She's a relocalization movement champion and the co-founder of the Simplicity Forum. John DeGraff is the best-selling author of Affluenza, challenger of overwork and reclaiming our time through timeday.org, and the recipient of more than 100 regional, national, and international awards for filmmaking. Cecile Andrews is a local community leader who has been featured on CBS, NPR, PBS, and lots of other places for the themes of her acclaimed slow/simple living books. And last, we have Jerome Segal, who is the director of the University of Maryland's Peace Consultancy Project and president of the Jewish Peace Lobby. Now, for the intriguing origins of my conversation with these great folks, check out the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM052. It's a wonderful thing what a little persistence and a lot of follow-up can do. Now, in this audio episode and the written show notes, we're going to hit on a number of things. For example, we'll cover why you should demand TV broadcasters stop hypnotizing us into high consumption lifestyles, how the United States is the most inefficient society ever, and why simple living is as much about freedom or liberation as it is about anything else. All right, abrupt transitions ahead. Here we go. Our first question, if you would, how do we replace the systems preventing humans from making the simple, sustainable choice the default one?
Yeah. You know what comes up for me is the social and the psychological dimensions of this. There's the physical, but I think the social psychology is even more profound. And the average person in our society watches 4 hours of television a day, the average family about 6 hours of TV time a day. And so we are being hypnotized day in, day out, with a mindset of that fosters high consumption lifestyles. And it's just virtually impossible to turn away from that. So I think, in my estimation, one of the key things that we need to do is to challenge the major media, the broadcasters that use our public airwaves, and say, there are airwaves, and you're giving us a message that's really not serving the public interest, convenience, and necessity, which is a legal requirement. There are systems there that are just dominating our social psychology every day, and they can move, they can evolve. And that would be one among a number, but that would be one systems shift that would really make a massive difference, I think.
Jerome, I am going to send this one over to you now, and you can tell us, how do we replace these systems, oftentimes invisible, that are preventing us from making an easy choice to lead simple and sustainable lives?
Yeah, well, I think, as some of you know from In Graceful Simplicity, I put forward a very different analysis. I mean, my view is that, you know, while there are many different versions of the substance of the simple life, is, I think what they all have in common is that there's some point at which we should be able to withdraw from the getting and consuming part of life, that we should be able to withdraw from the economy and do whatever those things are that are inherently valuable, about which all sorts of different people have disagreed over the years. But where I differ from a lot of people is that you know, my basic diagnosis wasn't that we suffer from affluenza or excess consumerism, but that actually the cost of meeting basic needs in the United States is extraordinarily high, that we're actually probably the most inefficient society in the history of mankind in terms of how much money it takes to meet very basic needs. But I think that basic needs have to be thought of not as things like, you know, food and square foot of housing and so on, but in sort of social functional terms, like being able to live in a safe neighborhood with access to good public schools. And you ask sort of, what's the price of admission to such a neighborhood in the United States? And it's purchasing a certain kind of house, the cost of which is staggering. Or you ask, you know, what does it take to have economic security in this country? And what does it take to have a sense of security that your children's future will be, offer them real choices, and that drags you into the cost of college? Or what is it to have real security about health, and that drags you, you know, into the high cost of health care and so on? So my view is really that that the single biggest obstacle actually to people being able to walk away from the economy, or from, you know, a good chunk of it, is not their psychological flaws, but actually the staggering costs that we face in our society. And and as an example of something which we haven't really taken, well, not just credit for, but I mean, we haven't even really thought of, I think, as an enormous victory, I think the Affordable Care Act is exactly the kind of policy change that begins to make it possible for people to choose more simple lives. The extension of Medicaid to people with very low incomes, I mean, that's exactly, it seems to me, the kind of thing that you want for people who do not have high incomes to know nonetheless that they can get high medical care. And the idea that you can, that you're not tied, for instance, to jobs, the specific jobs, that you can experiment, you can drop out of things and so on, and you can't be denied insurance because you have to go to a new plan and you had some condition that was being treated under an old plan and so on. So I think there's a tremendous amount of movement towards freedom that is inherent in that piece of legislation, which wasn't really adopted with our kind of conceptualization, yet actually is exactly the kind of thing that this country needs. But for it to really aggregate It's got to be coupled with other pieces. I'll just give one other example. But I would say with education, and I think that one of the major policy failures is that we don't have free higher education in this country. And we used to. I went to a free college in New York City that New York City supported many years ago, and even those have succumbed. But the truth of the matter is we've gone radically backwards. It used to be the case that this society had a commitment to free education for people up to the point at which they had the skills in order to participate in pretty good shape in the job market. And that meant high school. And what happened is that over the decades, the level of education that you need actually to really be viable in the job market certainly included college and may even now be beyond it. And instead of extending that commitment or maintaining that commitment to education up to the point at which you need to, you know, enter the job market, we abandoned it. And it was done without any public discourse. There's sort of no awareness that the society made a choice to move backwards on its relation to that kind of thing. But that's the kind of building block that added to health issues having to do with job security and so on that ultimately will free people up. And I think the issue of security is fundamental. And
well, I'd be interested to know more at a later point in time. You mentioned as we move forward, we're moving forward inefficiently. That is when we're not moving backwards in our attempts to move forward. Well, I'd like to change the topic a little bit and start talking a little bit more about what we can do, what actions you all think are most important for us to pursue, and maybe even how the people who are listening to this should think about them, whether that's in terminology or whether that's a mindset. Cecile, I'm going to put this to you first. Can you tell us what actions from your perspective are most important for us, whether it's at the national level or the local level, the international level, wherever you want to take it, and how you'd like people to think about them?
For me, the biggest thing is trying to build community at whatever level you can. And it's, you know, if you're in a program like you go to a Sierra Club or something, you try to build community there. You build community in your neighborhood, try to set up separate learning things. But to me, that's the chief thing of somehow giving people a different vision of the way to live and to not have us see money, profit, as the most important thing, that we substitute community. So to me, that's the most important thing to do, and that you can do it in your daily life, you can do it at an organizational level, and you can work for it for a policy level in trying to get things changed, like, you know, working for minimum wage and things like that. So that's mine.
Can you expand on that a little bit? You talk about a vision. Can you tell us your vision or maybe an example of how you're trying to realize that vision right now?
Well, I saw the words of Saint-Exupéry, and he said, you know, when you want to build a boat, don't just give people the wood and the plans, but teach them to yearn for the vast and endless sea. That there's a vision, and the vision to me came when I, you know, learned first about slow food, that, you know, we're not supposed to be eating fast food, we're not supposed to be eating something alone in our car, but we're supposed to be together, we're supposed to be laughing, we're supposed to be enjoying our lives, as well as feeling a connection to the earth and the way you grow it. So I think that vision of the joyful community is to me what I am always trying to work for, no matter what. Now, it's interesting because we're down in during the winter in Santa Cruz, and we've been involved in transition, we've been involved in time bank, but for some reason they are failing here. And it's very interesting to see why. And I think it's because nobody really worked hard to bring people together and have them form those connections that they could have through community. They looked at it as, oh, well, let's get this done, instead of how can we do this together. So, but it's interesting to me because I agree with Vicki that these are the sorts of things that really inspire people to live differently. And as they live differently, they become different selves and pay attention to different policy issues at the same time.
It's interesting to see people focus on the mechanics of what we want to have done without trying to engage people's hearts and souls and spirits process is all well and good, but having the appropriate mindset for it and really buying into it on an emotional level is an entirely different thing. Dwayne, how about you? What actions would you like to see us collectively pursue, and how would you frame them for somebody?
I usually start by telling people that there's no cookbook for simplicity. There's no recipe to follow. It's essentially a personal path. And it depends upon where we are with our lives and what we're doing with our lives. But following up on the theme I brought up at the beginning, one of the first things I would suggest is turning off the television and disconnecting from the mass media consciousness that is so strongly pro-consumerist. And as you were suggesting, Joel, to really tap into the inner dimensions of simplicity, and whether it's our in our personal lives, meditation and such, in our relationships with family and friends, in our connection with community, and Vicky and others and Cecile talked about transition movements. I think community building is vital to the growth of an alternative to a consumer society. So I think, you know, you could just, I've written about what I call the garden of simplicity. But there isn't, it isn't simply material frugality. It's also family simplicity, how we want to live in family and what priorities we want to give to our kids. It's compassionate simplicity. Gandhi said, live simply so that others may simply live. It's an ecological simplicity. We're looking at extraordinary climate disruption for our collective future. It's business simplicity as we move towards a more green kind of economy. It's civic simplicity. Jerome was speaking about that theme. As we redesign our transportation and education and all the rest. So I don't have a singular answer to that, but I just see this is a systems shift that we're speaking about, not only on the external side, but also on the inner side. And it's putting those two together that will actually begin to transform how we live on the earth.
Okay. Your approach that you were just mentioning, all these different forms of simplicity, that was relatively new to me until a few months ago. And I'll have a link for people to explore in the show notes where they can read up on your 8 forms of simplicity. And the excerpt, I believe, from your book, Voluntary Simplicity.
Yeah.
I like the new perspective and all the different facets of simplicity and different ways to think about them. Well, Jerome, how about you? Is there anything that you'd like to build upon from Cecile or from Dwayne, or do you have a different approach, or would you like us to pursue something in particular and think about it in a way?
Well, I think that I don't quite know how to put this, but I almost sort of feel that we need sort of ideological development. I think that we need to be able to be clear enough about what our analysis is, that we're able to bring it to bear on the major topics of public discourse. Like, we don't enter into the main things that are up for grabs or should be up for grabs in the centers of power. We should have enough of a perspective that we're able to make the connection. So on the issue, for instance, of inequality, you know, there's a growing movement on that for inequality. But what would be the distinct perspective of simple livingites on that? And it's something different than equal opportunity to make it, whether it's equal opportunity to make it or wider levels of success, so that, you know, so that the standards with which we would judge policies are fundamentally different than the right or what gets called the left, but, you know, progressive liberal thought. I mean, we come at this from really a distinctly different perspective than both of them, but we haven't really been able to make enough of the connection to have a distinct voice. And I think sometimes I think that the that the question, that the concept of simplicity sometimes confuses us. So, for instance, in my life, I don't have a simple life at all. Sometimes on some visceral level, I suffer from that. But there are other aspects of it which are staggeringly complex and are the best parts of my life. And it sometimes has to do, let's say, with my work. Most of my work is on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And I just got back from, you know, some meetings with Israelis and Palestinians in London on this. And from the point of view of a meaningful life, of something that I'm clear in my mind that I'm doing the right thing when I'm doing it, it's when I'm making something that seems to me like progress in that sphere. And there's nothing simple about it. But what there is, I think, is because I was able to sort out certain kinds of relationships to the economy, I think I was able to create enough freedom so that I was able to devote large chunks of my life to something of that sort without getting much money to do it from external sources. So for me, the thing is, it's more a freedom movement in a sense than it is a simplicity movement. It's a certain kind of liberation struggle that liberates you towards meaningfulness, which is very broad. But the question is, what liberates you? And maybe it's the shortage of secure, dignified need. Addressing slots in the society, and maybe rather than talking about full employment or growth or control of inflation, whatever the sort of big headings are for what do we want from an economy, that we need to push that what's an economy for question harder, to the point at which we've got a clear enough answer that it can begin to translate into a coherent perspective that distinguishes where we're coming from.
Well, let me ask you, one thing that's certainly clear is you are not one to shy away from a tough issue. When you say we need to start talking about what's an economy for, I don't think that's a perspective that most people have thought of. What's your opinion on what we use our economy for, what we're in pursuit of?
I gave an answer in my book. I mean, basically, I actually think that the purpose of an economy is primarily to free us from the economic realm. I think that or to free us to pursue that part of work that's fulfilling. So, an economy is to either allow us to sacrifice income in order to have meaningful work, or it's to allow us to walk away from work that's not meaningful to do those things in life that really are, whether it's being with friends or participating in local politics, or it's some kind of spiritual activity, or it's science, or it's literature and the arts, and so on. But basically, the idea is that the good life really isn't about purchasing the things that are put to us, and I actually don't think most people are stuck in the economy because of, as I said before, an affluenza-like consumptivitis. I think they're stuck there because things that you really do have to have in order to have some security for yourself and your family are enormously expensive. So our economy is failing, and it's been failing for years, despite the fact that in terms of physical potential, it's had that potential for ages. In other words, there was this period in which people had to work, 100 years ago, had to work, 70% of the work week just to have enough food, and food and clothing occupied, 85% of the time people put to work. Well, we went through physical transformations in productivity that reduced what you need for to cover your food needs and your clothing needs, down to something like about 20% of the amount of time that people put in their work week. Rather than that being liberating, it was taken up by the growth of all sorts of other things. And so in certain realms, the economy made potential progress, but because of things that went on broadly speaking, in the economy, we failed to actually bring to fruition that it actually gave us freedom to walk away from the economic realm. And a straightforward example, for instance, just in the last couple of years, has been this whole thing with the internet, with cable, with cell phones, and so on, and the staggering bills that you have to have now with respect to communications, which was not even a major category 20 years ago in terms of what people spend their money on. And now, you know, we're facing bills of like a couple of $1,000s a year when we talk about growth, but there's been, for the middle class and for people below it, there has been no growth for decades. So most people's income hasn't been growing, but the economic needs in order to participate in what's become the norms of the society, which as an individual becomes very hard to walk away from, those in fact have. So there's been an increase of pressure to be engaged in the getting part of economic life. And what I'm saying is that we don't systematically and rigorously keep in mind that really what our objective should be is a certain kind of liberation.
Well, I'm intrigued to learn more about why so many of the things that we're paying for right now aren't part of the commons, why we have to pay an entity in order to have access to them, as opposed to just being part of the public good and therefore being facilitated by some entity that won't charge us money for it. Well, I really appreciate all of you having a conversation with each other and with me today. Dwayne, would you like to add anything?
Just my gratitude and great thanks to you, Joel, for picking up this theme. The rest of us on this call have been working this for many, many years, and it's been very challenging, as you can discern from the call. And so I just really want to express my gratitude to you and to the next generation coming along for continuing this work. It's so vital to our future. Thanks much.
So what did you take away from that conversation? And of course, by reading the show notes. Now for me, I know a ton of my assumptions were challenged. Like, I don't know, just for example, Vicky told us that mass individual change doesn't necessarily lead to a cultural change, which I always thought that was the case. And really, it's interesting to hear the language that each of these five people use when they talk about these really big issues that are facing our current and future generations. It kind of makes me wonder if all of this recent emphasis on happiness and slow living or a meaningful minimum wage, is it a manifestation of that same ancestral primal fairness and simplicity that humans used to have? I'm not sure, but I definitely know that it's worth thinking about more. Now, make sure you don't miss the additional cut commentary, which is recapped in the show notes for episode 52 at valueofsimple.com/SASM052. Vicky and John, who sadly you didn't hear from in this audio version, have a lot of great stuff for you in those show notes. All right. Now it's time for us to hear from you. You can do it in an email to joel@valueofsimple.com, a tweet to @JoelZeslowski, an iTunes review at valueofsimple.com/iTunes, or any other way you like. First up, I want to know, was the periodic echo almost too much for you to bear? Next, would you like me to reconvene this same cast of groovy characters, with better internet mojo, of course, for a follow-up conversation based around a key question that's been rattling around your mind? If so, what is that big question that you would like these fascinating people to answer for you and for us? And last, what do you believe we should do to replace the systems preventing humans from making the simple, sustainable choice the default one? Let's get that conversation going and help our community building efforts in a comment on the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM052. Thanks a ton for making it through the audio issues and some awkward edits transitioning from one person to another. I tell you though, I wouldn't have published this episode if I didn't think it was worth your time and attention, which I am always so, so grateful for. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple.